Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Deep in the heart of Appalachia, guys set out on a quest to create the greatest podcast.
Sorry, dude. I thought we agreed on the correct pronunciation of Appalachia.
No, dude. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over and over. It's pronounced Appalachia.
Listen, freaking angels and the women got together. That's how we got Bigfoot. That's how we got vampires. That's why we got all of this stuff.
These ancient Appalachian mountains that are literally older than bones. There's old entities here. When you start finding out more about them, they start finding out more about you.
Good Lord, sir. This goose has gone rabid. And you think you're just going to run up with your little sword on the king of the goose squad?
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable. They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers that they probably will never ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Hello, hill folk, and welcome back to another episode of Appalachian Intelligence. Tonight, I have a very special guest. We've been trying to get this together for a while now, but finally, schedules are aligning, and we got him on. It's Garrett from the Hit Kit Company. So I guess you guys can take from the name what that is. And I'm a huge fan, He sent me a care package and it was just, it's amazing. So thank you, Garrett, for that. And that's going out on my social media, my pictures and everything. So Garrett, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight, man?
All right. Thank you. Good to talk to you finally.
Yes. It's been a long time coming. Back and forth throughout the schedule, and Justin's schedule was crazy forever. And then I started this job, dude. I work like 10, 12 hours a day. It's nuts. So,
well, one time we missed out, it was on me. I got sick. I didn't have a voice.
Oh, yeah. It's always something, isn't it, man? It seems like, but finally the stars aligned and here we are, you know? So,
I got a banger for you tonight.
Well, I'm ready, dude. So whenever you're ready, first, just if you want to tell everybody about your stuff or you want to say that for the end, you want to go into the notes now?
Let's just dive in. Why not?
Sweet. All right, man. Boy, the floor is yours, and I'll just be loading down questions.
All right, so this, we're going to be talking about something called Neanderthal predation theory, and it is my favorite theory that no one's ever heard of, and it makes a lot of sense to me. But this theory is something that addresses some problems with Darwin's theory of evolution. Not everyone believes that, and for good reason. It's got some holes. And I think some alternative theories, you got like... a lot of people believe in the Anunnaki. Stoned ape theory is another one. But, yeah. Even creation, like just God made it how it is. But I mean, basically Darwin's theory doesn't have a missing link. Like it predicts this slow evolution, a gradual change from one thing to another. And according to like the way that theory goes, it should be so gradual. We should be able to find a fossil record. But we haven't. So it's kind of like, what's the deal with that?
Yeah.
But Yeah, another thing it just doesn't explain is, like, I guess when you look at the fossil records and whatnot, apparently, like, about 50,000 years ago, modern man just seemed to spring up out of nowhere.
Yeah, right. And then what was it? Oh, I'm trying to think. Homo erectus, right? Or Homo...
Some kind of homo. I don't know, yeah, man.
Yeah, it's one of the homos.
Look, I'm not a... My background's not biology, anthropology, yeah, none of that, okay? Yeah. I'm just a... I read a book on this. I read it twice. I think it's interesting enough that I want to share it. I think more people need to know about it. But in any case, just a little teaser, because after I present this, we're going to get into what I think is some biblical proof of it. I know, nice, like, a lot of this audience comes from that perspective, and I don't think they're at odds with each other, honestly. So yeah, we're going to get to that. But yeah, so we explained the fossil record, how there isn't one. So it's like, what's the deal? Did God just make, just like one day say, snap his fingers and say everything's here as it is? Did the aliens come down? I've got a theory here that involves Neanderthals. Oh, this is going to tie into Bigfoot, too. I know y'all like to get into that a lot.
Oh,
this is
going
to change the whole Bigfoot discussion. So, Neanderthal predation theory. Homo erectus, all that stuff. I don't really know exactly what's what. I'm just going to call them, like, the pre-human ancestor. We're just going to set up a timeline, okay? So, first of all, before I get into this, first of all, second of all, I forgot what number I'm on. But forget everything you know about Neanderthals for a second here. All right, I'm going to proceed. We've forgotten it all. So probably about, let's say the common human ancestor, like, Neanderthals and humans, they might as well be cousins, but, they kind of, like, originated from a common ancestor. And according to this theory, and, basically about somewhere between 350 and 790,000 years ago, some of this common ancestor went from somewhere in Africa into Ice Age Europe. And this was like a chimpanzee-like creature, right? And like, I think, what do we know about cold climate animals? Like, look at the black bear versus the polar bear. If something moves up to the north where it's hard to survive, where it's really cold, some adaptations are going to happen.
Yes.
They're going to get bigger, stronger. They're going to look a little different. If you have like a primate moving up there, he's going to get hairier. He's got to survive that cold. Food sources, when it's that cold, you can't really depend upon vegetation, vegetables, any of that to eat. You got to hunt.
Yeah.
So basically, you had a group of primates moving to Ice Age Europe, and over the course of several hundred thousand years, they basically became these super intelligent primates that could make fire, hunt with tools. They worked together in a pack, and they became the apex predator of Ice Age Europe. And they were taking down woolly mammoths, saber-toothed tigers, all that. And This stands in contrast to the mainstream theory, because the mainstream theory, if you just Google picture of Neanderthal, it looks like a person. It kind of, you know, it's a little different facial features, but they got like the smooth skin. We kind of draw them with clothes. We kind of make, they look very much like us. According to like the mainstream theory, basically, if you gave a Neanderthal a good shave and put him in a suit, he could like walk around town and might think he looks a little funny, but he'd fit in more or less.
Yeah.
So according to this theory, well, if you look at all the other primates on this planet, like, we are the only ones that are relatively hairless. Every other primate, very hairy. So why should we assume that Neanderthals looked like us?
Yeah.
Rule of thumb, I mean, it's probably better to assume that they maintained that hair, that maintained that fur. So, I mean, like, already we're at odds with the theory of what Neanderthals are. But, yeah, anyway, they became apex predators up there. They're hunters. When we look at mammalian hunters, they tend to operate in the dark for the most part. It's easier to sneak up on prey when the prey can't see you. So they probably had some kind of nocturnal adaptations, the ability to see in the dark pretty well. Probably had a big, keen, very good sense of smell. And when you look at like the fossils of Neanderthals, they did have these big nasal cavities. They did have these giant eye sockets. I mean, it looks like some kind of primate that, well, hunted at night.
Yeah.
So very different than what the mainstream tells us. So meanwhile, while the Neanderthals are up there becoming bigger and badder, tougher, stronger, refining their predatory instincts, behaviors, whatnot, our ancestors, we kind of come from the branch that kind of stayed in that Africa area. It was a lot easier to live down there. We would do some hunting, but I mean, we could also forage. In comparison to what the Neanderthals were to become, like, we were like relatively puny, right?
Yeah.
So as time goes on, some of our ancestors who they still look kind of chimp-like, they still have the fur and everything. They're not human at this point. It's still, you have a group. Anyway, a portion of them eventually migrate up into the Levant area, the Eastern Mediterranean, where modern day Israel, Syria, Lebanon, that area is, right?
Yes.
And they set up shop there. They're living good. Life's good. And then Europe gets even colder, perhaps. Or for some reason, a group of these Neanderthals, they start moving south. Maybe it got too cold even for them. But they make their way to the same area, the Levant, and they see us there. And we are just easy pickings. We're easy prey. They've never ate so good.
Yeah.
So they're wiping the floor with us. Well, so they tended to like stay, you know, more mountainous area where the big game was, where we were more on like the lowlands and all that. So it wasn't really instantaneous. But over the period of 50,000 years, according to this theory, they slowly whittled us away. So they started off eating the fat ones, the slow ones, the dumb ones. And through this predatory selection, it changed our ancestors into what we were in many ways. So let's see. Hang on. I don't want to skip anything. I got a lot of good stuff here. All right. So yeah, we were prey. So yeah, obvious adaptations, the slow and dumb ones are going to die first. But here's the thing, like, just as like Ice Age Europe created like an apex predator, when an animal is a prey, it begins to adapt as well. And like one of the first adaptations was that our ancestors learned they needed to learn what their predator was. Like if they see a Neanderthal coming, they need to know that this is dangerous. We need to get out of there. So they kind of began to establish this early tribalism, this concept of us versus them. Like this is what we look like. This is what they look like. They're like way hairier, way furrier, way bulkier, way meaner looking than we are. We need to be able to recognize them. And are you familiar with the concept of the uncanny valley?
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like I should probably just say it briefly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
But basically, if we see something that's just like humanoid, but not quite right, just like a little off, it just doesn't sit easy with us. And you see this a lot of times with like computer generated stuff, like a video game that's graphics are like so damn good, but it's just like a little off and it's kind of disturbing. So what, according to this theory, basically the whole reason the uncanny valley exists is because we had to differentiate ourselves from our predator, which was similar to us, but not quite the same. So furthermore, once we had this concept of us and them, well, they were killing us. They were, well, raping our ancestors. That's why we have this, some people today have this Neanderthal blood still. Like there was enough of that going on where it they're began to resent them. Everything that was Neanderthal, we deemed unattractive. So if they're super hairy, super furry, well, maybe less furry, less hairy is attractive. So if you got like too much fur, you're not getting laid. You're not going to reproduce. You're not going to pass on the genes. So basically our hatred of them kind of drove us to sexually select everything that they were not. And so when you look at why humanity is so different from all these other primates, this was like a big part of it. So other like ways that humans differ from other primates, like we're taller, our women are curvier, this kind of trapezoidal shoulder shape in men, the way we walk, concepts of personal hygiene. I guess the hygiene part was in part because Neanderthals had such good sense of smell. Like if we were stinky, like you're going to get caught. So removing, even shaving, like excess body hair, like that can keep a funk. So like a lot of our behaviors today, it's like our concepts of cleanliness, we just, back then it was a matter of survival. But furthermore, it's like if your whole goal is to differentiate us from them, things like clothing, jewelry becomes a part of life. There were other adaptations too. So we mentioned sexual predation too, like rape. So this is kind of interesting, but other primates put out a lot more pheromones than humans do. Like we still do to some extent, but it's like nothing like them. Furthermore, like women, like our women, they have their cycles. You can't really tell by looking at the outside, not like you can with other primates. Like when a lady chimpanzee goes into heat, there is some major swelling, and it is a very visible signal, like that it is time. Then if the males don't see that, they're not interested. So basically over the course of this 50,000 years, if a Neanderthal were to burst into your camp and see that visual sign, like he's programmed like, oh, it's time to go to town. But if time goes on and I guess think that just kind of gradually went away from that for that reason. Another thing, women's, you know how their periods can sync together, like if they're in groups over time. Well, that time of the month can be, it can release a lot of scents that a Neanderthal might be able to smell, pick up on, right? So if you just have all your women like popping off at random times, then the tribe is going to be in constant danger. But if they have the ability to sync up, then might be better just get it all done at once. So there's more adaptations, but I feel like if you want to jump in on anything, I got a lot more. This is information dense.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I've got a couple of uncles on my mom's side that might put a dent in your hair theory. But
they are Bigfoot. It's Bigfoot.
And there's some people around here with some foreheads that you can definitely see the Neanderthal bloodline. But yeah, man, everything you just said makes complete sense. I mean, yeah, that's what you are. You're blowing my mind right now.
This book blew my mind. I read this like how many years ago? I don't know, it was just like 4 or 5. And no one knows about it. It's written by his name's Danny Vendramini, an Australian guy. Good luck getting in touch with him. The whole reason I'm sharing this today is because it's like someone's got to take up the torch. It's a good theory.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We got more sexual adaptations. So I don't know if you ever noticed on the lady monkeys, they don't really keep their boobs the whole time. They just kind of swell up as needed and go away, right?
Yeah.
So basically, let's see. So for like a chimpanzee, they don't really swell up until they're pregnant and they're needed for the offspring. So if a chimpanzee sees another like a female chimp with breasts, he's like not interested at all. So this is kind of crazy, but like our females like keeping their chest the whole time, it acts as a turnoff to Neanderthals. Everything we are, it's like the opposite of what a Neanderthal would want to be.
My gosh.
Yeah. It's kind of, think about like the predator-prey relationship of like why do cheetahs run so fast?
Yeah, because the prey runs fast.
Yeah, they got to catch the gazelle. Why does the gazelle run so fast? Because they got to avoid the cheetah. And you know, the slow cheetah doesn't catch any gazelles. He's out of the gene pool. Yeah. The slow gazelle, he gets eaten. But it's just kind of, they're constantly sharpening each other. It's like this predator-prey dynamic is very powerful. And if you tried to explain the cheetah and you didn't know anything about gazelles, good luck. You might think the Anunnaki did it.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be a valid, it's a valid theory, like in absence of anything else. But it's like, if a predator-prey dynamic shaped us, and, well, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I don't want to spoil what happened to the Neanderthal. So anyway, we've got more adaptations to cover. So, safety in numbers, right? So they're a lot bigger than us, but maybe if we congregate in large enough groups, maybe we can fend them off potentially. So we started seeing up more groups of us and be like, hey, let's join together. More chimp strong. That whole Planet of the Apes thing, right?
Yeah.
So this is the beginning of society. And as you grow in numbers, you have to have certain societal adaptations to do that. Concepts of like group loyalty, language, even the ability to communicate, some sort of hierarchy, like leadership. These traits, and like the bigger the group is, like the more organization you need. Eventually you get things like division of labor, forward planning. All of these adaptations are needed if you're going to survive against the apex predator that is the Neanderthal. I mean, these Neanderthals, they use weapons, they can make fire, they can see in the dark. It's formidable. Only the strongest are going to survive. And the thing is, they almost took us out. But a couple more adaptations, and we're going to get to the twist in this story. But another adaptation need, how to survive the night, right? So if you just have, you know, ever wondered about like sleep cycles, well, we kind of go through periods of like light sleep, deep sleep. So if you're like in the woods by yourself and you're in a period of deep sleep, something's going to sneak up on you. If you're lightly sleeping, you hear a noise, you're going to wake up, right?
Yes.
But if you're in a big group, some of you are going to be sleeping lightly. Some of you are going to be sleeping deeply. There is bound to be someone who is going to be able to hear that noise, wake up, and sound the alarm. So sleep cycles, there you have it, Neanderthal predation theory. Dogs, man's best friend. We needed them because they've got great senses. Like, we're not too good in the dark. Dogs can hear, dogs can smell. They are the natural ally to survive the night against Neanderthals.
Man's best friend.
Yeah. Another one, childhood instinct of fear in the dark. We have that one today. Why is every little kid afraid of the dark? It's probably because we got hunted by Neanderthals for 50,000 years and it became, well, an adaptive instinct, right?
Yeah.
Also, another thing, no matter where you go in the world, kids, like, they play hide and seek. That's an adaptation. You got to know how to hide.
Yeah.
Like, these things, we just kind of overlook these things, but yeah, hey, we needed them.
You don't think about it like that, do you?
Oh, no. Okay, so we're getting to the twist here. So over 50... period of 50,000 years, we are gradually making all these changes that I just listed, but still, they almost wipe us out. I think according to this theory, we might have had as few as a couple hundred people, 150, something like that. And then something happened where we we were a few survivors left, right? And at the beginning of all this, when the Neanderthals first met us, we look nothing like that anymore. We are now essentially modern man. We've gotten rid of all that hairy fur. We've made it very easy to distinguish us and them. We've gotten faster, stronger. Neanderthals, they haven't changed too much. They haven't had any reason to change. They've been doing great because they're not just eating us. They're eating other animals. They're already perfectly adapted to do that. But we're not easy prey anymore. But something happened that enabled us to turn the tables on them. And this theory suggests it might have been the development of long-range weaponry. Could have been the stone and sling. Could have been the atlatl, throwing spears, javelins, something like that. Because this gave us the ability to kill them from a distance. And then we're faster than them. So we just kind of dance around them. We have superior numbers. We're better planners at this point. It's like, sure, in like hand to hand, they're going to kick our ass, but we're not going to fight on their terms.
Yeah.
So we turned the tide. We figured out how to kill Neanderthals. And then we continued to figure out how to kill them. We figured out how to kill them better and better. And if you killed a Neanderthal, you were getting laid. You were a hero.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, that was the ultimate status. I mean, kill the big bad monster that's been terrorizing your people for 50,000 years. So not only that, but like we were on a quest of vengeance. Like we were bloodthirsty. Like only the coldest, hardest psychopaths were left. You wonder like why nature has given us psychopaths today. Like why would we have that adaptation? And it's probably necessary back then. You had to be able to stab a Neanderthal through the heart without any hesitation. Yeah. But now it's like we see a squirrel in the road and we got to swerve out of the way. Like, we wouldn't make it back then.
No, we've come a long way, huh?
Yeah. Those we're living in different times.
Yeah.
Plain to say. But yeah, we were hunting Neanderthals because it made our territory safer. But beyond that, it was like kind of became something of a sport. You know, that's how you got honor in your society. That's how you proved yourself as a man. Like if you couldn't kill a Neanderthal, like what good were you? Like that was the aspiration for all of them. So in any case, Neanderthal is not really a threat to us anymore. And just as they were the apex predator before, we have surpassed them. Thanks to our intelligence, our speed, our tool use. And there is nothing on this planet that can stop us. So this group that was originally in that Levant area then begins to spread out. And some go back into Africa. Some go into Asia. Some go into the hearts of Neanderthal country, where that's Europe, right?
Yeah.
But at this point in time, there's like all these other primates, like ancient hominids. That's like, where do they all go? And it's like, well, humanity was unleashed upon the planet and we had this us versus them attitude. And we just saw anything that was quasi Neanderthal like and we took them out. So it's kind of like remarkable, like humanity, like we're all over the globe. Yet, like, what's our DNA that we have in common? Like it happened quickly. Like we had a common source. And yeah, that explains that. So anyway, the ones that went into Europe, Neanderthal homeland, essentially, it's kind of interesting here because like just as we were their prey and it shaped us, well, now that they were our prey, being prey has begun to shape them. So a big part of like, the mainstream Neanderthal theory, like why we view them kind of like we do us, is because at a certain point they began to develop some culture, the same things that we had. Like, in fact, they call it like the late flowering of Neanderthal culture. And basically is like, I guess if you have a bad predator, like a badass predator preying upon a primate, eventually develop culture. But we kind of killed them off before they could get too far along with it. So that's how that goes. But I think the last holdout I think they found some fossils there, and it's like the youngest Neanderthal fossil they've found. And it's basically because we just pushed them to these caves where they had nowhere else to go. There was nowhere else to run.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So anyway, eventually we spread across the planet. We take out the last Neanderthal. Well, or did we? Maybe there's some that became Bigfoots. Yeah. Maybe some last holdouts. There's some rough terrain on Earth and like places that they can, like, they're adapted to that Ice Age Europe. They can survive anywhere that's cold and mountainous and rugged, and they got the senses to avoid us. But kind of getting ahead of myself with the Bigfoot talk. But so anyway, last Neanderthal killed, and now we got the planet to ourselves. But as I mentioned before, we're kind of psychopaths, right? And that's a great trait for Neanderthal fighting, but it also makes us want to kill each other. Yes. We have our personal little tribal communities, and then we'll see other tribes of humans. And we have human-human tribal warfare. And basically. So with that comes, I guess, somewhere along the line. And whereas before you just had to know how to survive against Neanderthals, now you got to survive against other humans. So this is where defensive fortifications start coming into play. We start building forts. And basically you have two types of groups on this planet. You got the fort builders who are just sitting down. They got their place. They're hanging out. And then you got the tribes that stuck to hunting and gathering. So you really have like a division in types of humanity. But the ones who build the forts, they're going to further develop, I guess, cultural adaptations. They're going to develop rule of law. They are going to develop agriculture. And it's just like, how can we stay in one place and survive versus the people who are just trying to roam the land? But furthermore, of like the ones who did stay in the cities and whatnot, they have their laws, like the laws back then, like the Code of Hammurabi, like it's pretty brutal. Basically, like if you couldn't hack it in that society, there are death penalties all over the place. So over a course of time, like, you know, you continually kill the worst offenders of your society, and you're left with what we are today, like the meek, like compared to them. So it's like, I guess Darwin's theory of evolution is like a very slow and gradual thing, but everything I've said, it's been like either a predator selects for certain genetic material, our sexual preferences select for certain types of genetic material, and then now it's kind of like we're starting to weed out those who just can't hack it in society. So all of these things, you put them all together, and in terms of like, I guess, evolutionary terms, it all happens very quick, right?
You know, there's something you just said too. We are meek compared to what these guys, early humans, and it does, you know, and compared to what we were in the beginning when Neanderthals first met us. And in the Bible, it happens to say the meek shall inherit the earth.
Oh snap.
Yeah, so
maybe that applies here.
Yeah, who inherited the earth?
All right, so I guess on that note, I'm gonna get into my biblical proof here. You know, nice. The story of Jacob and Esau?
Yes.
All right, so I'm not gonna go over the whole thing, but I remember, so I went to like Christian school from 3rd through 12th grade, had like Bible as an academic subject, and I remember like learning about this story and being like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And basically you have two brothers, Jacob and Esau. They are fraternal twins. Esau is born first, and because he is the firstborn, it is his birthright to become essentially the leader of the family. He's going to get the bulk of the inheritance, and that's just the way it is. He came out first. So Jacob, secondborn, he's kind of envious of this. He wants to inherit everything, even though it's not his birthright. So he comes up with a plan, right? So Esau's out hunting one day, comes back starving, and sees that Jacob's got this stew. And Jacob's like, I'll give you my stew if you'll give me your birthright. And Esau's like, yeah, whatever. Just give it to me. Okay, cool. So I don't even think he knew what he agreed to, but I guess he agreed to it. And well, I guess he's later stands by the word. So anyway, their father, Isaac, Jacob's plan next, he's got to get his father to give him the birthright. And he's not going to give it to Jacob. Jacob's not born first. So Jacob's got to trick him. And this is where this theory comes in. This is the part that I thought made no sense at all. What Jacob does, he gets some of Esau's clothes, but he also gets a goat skin and puts it on his arm. And Isaac is like, hey, Esau, you don't sound like Esau. You sound like Jacob. But I just touched your arm and you feel like Esau. So I guess you're Esau. So I guess I'll give you the birthright. But that would imply that Esau was as hairy as a goat.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who's like that. I know you got some family that's hairy, you said, but are they like goat hairy?
No.
And no. When I was a kid hearing this, I was like, this just does not make any sense at all. I was like, this is kind of dumb. That's what I thought. I was like, this, but it stuck in my mind, right?
Yeah.
So down the line, I hear Neanderthal predation theory. And well, all these changes that Neanderthals like brought upon us like happened really quick. So maybe in biblical times, we still had a bit of our fur. Maybe we weren't like chimpanzee level fur, but maybe some of us had less fur, but some of us still had like goat level hair.
Yeah,
apparently Esau did. That's what the Bible says. So
yeah.
So anyway, Jacob, he later his name changes to Israel. The tribes of Israel come for him, and Esau goes off and he does his own thing. And some people say that they think Europeans are the ancestors of Esau, which would kind of fit in, because if Neanderthal, I mean, if Esau was that hairy, he probably had some strong Neanderthal DNA in him. And when you look at humanity today, what population has most of the Neanderthal DNA, like a little bit? It's Europeans.
Yes, mostly German, so, right? Like,
I think I don't know exactly, somewhere up in that area.
Yeah.
But if Europeans are descendants of Esau and Esau was super hairy, kind of implies that Esau had a bit more of the Neanderthal gene in him. But yeah, that's my biblical proof for all this. It kind of ties in nicely.
That is crazy.
I don't know another explanation for Esau's hair. That it just never added up to me until this.
Yeah, that always stuck with me too. That part of that story, I was like, goat's hide? That's how hairy that dude was. Like,
well, I mean, like the Bible, like these are some ancient stories, and it's very easy to just like read them and assume that everyone looked exactly like us back then. But I mean, if we've had some changes over the years, well, maybe we wouldn't recognize some of the characters back then.
Yeah,
I mean, they probably weren't as good looking, you know, probably a little hairier. They,
yeah,
but I mean, they were still smart. They, well, hang on, my dog is saying hello. I don't know if that came through.
Oh, that's fine,
but yeah, so that's that. In any case, you probably need to tie this to Bigfoot too.
Yeah,
so what if we didn't actually kill all the Neanderthals? What if, as we were preying upon them, one of their adaptations, they learned who their predator was. They learned to avoid humans. They're like, yeah, we want nothing to do with them. And they're still smart. They probably got smarter as a result of being preyed upon. If they survive to this day, if they are now, if their descendants, the descendants of Neanderthals, are Bigfoots, it would explain why Bigfoot wants nothing to do with us.
Yeah. It would explain a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
so the Bigfoot,
they would be like the, like you were talking about earlier, hide and seek. They'd be the world champions. Like,
oh yeah, I got that on the shirt.
Yeah. But yeah, so if that was Neanderthal just hiding from modern humans because they're like, okay, they've turned the tables and we're going to get done here. They had to, you know, they had to adapt too. The smarter mm-hmm. ones, stronger, bigger, hairier.
But did they adapt enough to become predators of us? Maybe not.
Yeah.
They're still in hiding. Maybe they just decided the way to go is just stay out of the way, stay hidden, stay in the roughest parts of the world. Yeah.
Could have been, and there's just, we outnumbered them by so many at that point. We just evolved faster, you know. We were already smarter, you know, everything like that to begin with. So,
yeah, they don't have a chance.
Yeah.
Now, it's kind of interesting to me, like when you look at the Bigfoot stories. Hang on a second. I need to get this dog out of here. She's
crying. No problem.
All right. Her name's June. Go, June bug. Go, go, go. All right. Yeah, anyway, my dog just had a good point about Neanderthals. That's what she was trying to trying to say. She was trying to interject. But yeah, so anyway, kind of interesting when you look at Bigfoot stories today. Some of them, a lot of them, it sounds like descriptions of a primate, right? Just like a big monkey in the woods. But some of them have like a supernatural feel to them. So I'm just trying to think like how that might fit into Neanderthal predation theory, is like Neanderthal predation theory just kind of puts it as like, well, there are these big, very smart and intelligent primates running around. But how do you explain the supernatural aspects of Bigfoot? And I don't really know. I mean, it's the way I see it, it's like there's like a lot of people today that seem to have some kind of psychic abilities, like extrasensory abilities. Maybe some of these Bigfoots, they're capable of the same.
Yeah.
I mean, we're their distant cousins. If we can do it, if some of us can do it, maybe some of them have these abilities as well.
Maybe through human predation on Neanderthals, they developed in a different way than us, in a better way, you know, or they just adapted in a different way than us. Yeah. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe we actually could adapt to that. We just don't have any reason to.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, whatever they are now, like maybe we can be at peace with them. Maybe yeah. we've reached a point. Maybe they've reached a point. Maybe it's better if we just kind of go stay our separate ways, but maybe yeah. that can change.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think really logging industries, things like that, if they're out there, they'll never, ever tell us.
You know, yeah.
There would be too many people like, we need to give them their habitat, you know?
Yeah, that, I don't blame them if they don't want anything to do with us. Yeah. But I saw, it wasn't this long ago, it was in North Georgia, some group getting together. They were going to try to go out in the woods and try to befriend Bigfoot.
Oh, man.
I thought that was an interesting approach, but maybe they're onto something. Maybe we need someone to go out there and hold out the olive branch, make peace.
Maybe.
But yeah, that's Neanderthal predation theory. That's what I got.
Dude, that was mind blowing. I love that. That you promised a banger, and that was a banger, because holy shnikes. That explains so much, man. And it makes sense. What was the name of that book again?
All right, so it's called, I think, Them and Us. If you just search for Neanderthal predation theory, you can find it pretty easy. Okay. The author is Danny Vendramini. And there is another important component of this, which I didn't really touch on, but he's got another theory that kind of dovetails into this one. Basically, he's got another book called, I think, The Second Evolution. And I haven't finished it yet. I've been meaning to. But basically, what it gets into is the idea that any like strong emotional reaction we have has a way of encoding itself into our DNA. So we mentioned all these adaptations as a result of essentially being killed off, like who got laid, who didn't. But and those will definitely limit genetic material, but like, what if part of like how things enter our genes, like what if it's like we have a heightened emotional reaction and something gets encoded into our genes, like a genetic memory? And so part of like the issue with Darwin's theory of evolution as it is that it just describes like a very slow change up of the of genetic makeup. But if strong emotional reactions can affect our genes, then that would mean we can change even quicker. But that would explain how things like fear of the dark would become an instinct. Like, we have legitimate reasons to be afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
Also, like in modern culture, like all these horror movies, we have like these like humanoid creatures of the night who come and like wreck us. Like, how many horror movies are like this?
Yeah.
Maybe that's like at a subconscious level, people are making these horror movies because they have a subconscious memory of our ancient predator that's genetically encoded. Like, yeah. We think these humanoid monsters, they can be like the scariest because they're kind of like us, but they're off. That uncanny valley is just triggered so hard. So like, how does prey know its predator? Well, heightened emotional response. You ever heard of that experiment they did with the turkeys and the hawks?
No.
So they got some turkey eggs, right? And they raised them in captivity indoors, right? So you got all these newly hatched turkeys. They're just hanging out. And then the scientists took a, just like a triangle. They flew it over, right? Turkeys did not care. Then they got something that was like hawk-shaped, right? Their predator. Flew it over. These little turkeys lost their mind. It's like no one... They were raised in captivity. Mama turkey didn't tell them anything. They just knew. And you see that with so many prey animals. They know they're predators. How do they know they're predators?
Exactly.
Like, how does that get in the genetic code? They're born with it. They know. Every instinct. Like, how do these things get encoded? But I mean, if like a heightened emotional response is responsible, that explains it.
Yeah. And I mean, look at it, all the adaptations still going on today. Like, I think it's the Highlands in Scotland. You'll have like these ptarmigan birds and snow hares. They turn white during winter. They can turn completely white during winter, and then they go back to their normal colors during the summer times. So they blend in again. And the foxes that prey on them do the same thing.
How do you explain that?
No, that's crazy, right? And then we're all just animals. We all adapt the same way.
Yeah, we lose sight of that, but I mean, it's the same rules that apply to them apply to us.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Inuit tribes, and you know, up in the Arctic. Dude, I would die.
Oh yeah,
I'm not made for that kind of weather. I can tell you that.
Well, the Sherpas around the Himalayas, like, aren't they better with like low levels of oxygen? I mean,
yeah,
like our environment shapes us.
It's crazy.
But it's really is.
Yeah. You got to figure during that time they probably still had the land bridge too. They probably tried to escape. That's why we see them so much here.
Yeah, I mean, like, conceivably, like, how long would it take to walk from Europe to, I don't know, North America over the land bridge? I mean, Neanderthals, they could have made the trek. Maybe it took them a year or two, but I mean, they could have made it over.
Yeah,
I mean, if there was like a pack of woolly mammoths that they're like in pursuit of, you know, they just have to follow the other animals, follow their prey.
We know they were over here too. You know, they got their bones all the way in Utah and Alaska, everywhere, you know.
Yeah. In fact, I would wager wherever there were woolly mammoths, Neanderthals probably were there too.
Yes. Of course, they'd have to deal with those short-faced bears coming across that land bridge. That would have been fun.
No, I wouldn't mess with those. Maybe they didn't either. But but that would explain why there's so many Bigfoots in North America, because maybe Neanderthals, they got here and then humanity didn't catch up for quite some time. Neanderthals are probably over here chilling, having a great time for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah.
And then, do we have more Bigfoot sightings here than in other parts of the world? I know you got like the Yeti.
Yeah.
Over in Asia.
In Asia, and then in Australia, you got the Yowie. Lots of Asian countries. I want to say Indonesia, places like that. They have different ones. I can't remember the name of that one. But they're small. They're not large. So it could actually be like an undiscovered primate. They're just
because here's the thing. It's like there were other primates on this planet. It wasn't just Neanderthals and our ancestors.
Yeah.
It's like there were more. And maybe these other Bigfoot, because like maybe Bigfoot is just like a catch-all term, you know? It's like we just kind of view it as any unknown primate, right?
Yeah.
But maybe descendants of other primates are what you have in Asia or Australia or wherever.
Yeah.
Maybe there's like little pockets that, I guess it makes sense. All of them would have had, either we wiped them out or they developed some kind of adaptation to avoid us.
Exactly. And so it would explain why in different regions of America, in like the Yowie, for example, isn't as tall as Bigfoots in America. They adapted differently to get away from the humans they were being, preyed upon by. Even in America, you look at Florida, the skunk ape, you know, darker fur blends in really well with all that dense, thick down in the swamplands, you know, the Everglades and all that, and has that stinks like a skunk for some reason. And then you go to the Northwest, you know, they're tall, they're gray, they're white, they're brown or reddish fur. They're always huge, you know. And then Ohio, same thing. But it's, yeah. And then you go to the Himalayas and the Yeti is supposed to be snow white, you know, because where's his, what is he hunting? You know, the goats and everything's up there. You got
it makes sense.
You got Sherpas telling you that they have to guard their I can't remember what, and you know, their goats, but there were other ones. I don't know if it's llamas or alpacas. Yaks. There you go, yaks. Yeah, they gotta guard their yaks from these things. I'm like, Jesus. How big do you gotta be to mess up a yak? You know? Those things are huge.
Yeah, we hear stories like that, and it's just so many people just want to dismiss it because they're like, oh, that can't be real. And those stories kind of challenge that idea, that paradigm.
Yeah.
But I mean, it makes sense. Like humanity, we come in all kinds of sizes, shapes, and colors. So Bigfoot, why not them too?
Yeah, exactly. Look at humanity. No, you know, there's different dog breeds, but they're all dogs. Yeah. You know, there's different cat breeds, but they're all cats.
And if heightened emotional reactions can change your genetic material, then, I mean, they could have made some changes quickly if need be.
You know, that gave me another thought, too, where it's actually imprinting onto your DNA. That would make sense in the fact that we're, you know, everything in the known universe is made up of the same things. You know, we're made up of the same things as the trees outside, you know. So a lot of people who deal in paranormal stuff talk about certain traumatic events imprinting onto a thing. And if we can prove that emotions actually imprint onto our DNA, which is the same thing everything else is made up of, how would it, maybe that would explain how hauntings happen. It was imprinted onto the, you know, at a microscopic or whatever it is, what's that called? Whatever, but I can't think of the word right now.
I mean, maybe it's like that whole mechanism of imprinting, like maybe it's operating on like some kind of spiritual level.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't, I'm not a materialist. I don't think it just has to be, I don't think it's just like a series of chemicals. Like, I think it'd be a mistake to assume that.
Yeah.
But that's a good point about the imprinting. Like, some kind of energy is released and it can embed itself in an old structure, rocks, a certain environment,
yeah,
an area, a region.
It's crazy to think about. Yeah.
I mean, hell, it makes a lot of sense. Like, if it can affect an old building, just like a whole bunch of like metal, rock, whatever, then why couldn't it affect biological material also?
Yeah.
I mean, I think ghosts are real.
Dude, you know what? When I first came on this podcast with Justin, I was the one who was like, listen, dude, you're going to have to, I got to see it. But going on, man, how long have we been doing it? Dang, we're going on 3 years. And everyone we've spoken to and all the fans of the show with their encounters and all this. And at some point, you just got to be like, listen, people are experiencing something. Yeah. They're experiencing something. They're not just telling me stories to be telling me stories. Why would they do that? I mean, I guess somebody could. I just don't believe that's what they're doing. And I think I'm a pretty good judge of when someone is lying to me or not, because we have spoken to some that I got, you know, in my mind, I'm like, Justin and them, they might have believed more of it, but I'm sitting there like, that's complete baloney, you know, but that's my opinion. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, you know.
I mean, what's nuts is like all of the history of humanity, there's like stories of ghosts and whatnot. And then in the modern day, like people you've talked to who've experienced these things directly, like always has been.
Yeah.
We're in denial now in a lot of cases because we can't explain it. If you can't explain something, either you accept that you don't understand it, or yeah, you're like, I do understand everything. That's wrong.
Yeah.
It's not comfortable to say you don't know everything sometimes.
That's exactly right. It's crazy to think that, and you know, and lately I'm going to get more into it on another podcast, but we've been experiencing things right here. It's crazy, like all of a sudden. But I don't know, man.
I'm gonna paraphrase Matthew 7:7. It's like, knock and the door shall be open, seek and ye shall find.
Yeah,
I think if you pursue the truth will find you.
Yes, that's what I think. That's what's been happening, which has led me more into, you know, back into paying more attention to my relationship with Jesus, you know. So I'm trying to do a lot better, you know.
He's a good guy to know in these spiritual times of spiritual warfare.
Yeah, he's a good guy to have on your side. I'll give you one example. One morning I got up and some things happened. That's one thing that we'll get into on the other podcast. But I went to the bathroom to get ready for work, you know, brush my teeth, deodorant, all that. And flip the light on. And there's three bulbs in this light fixture, and all of them are on, but they're barely on and they're just blanking. So I'm having to use the restroom, and it's like very low light blinking. It's messing with me. I'm like, all right, let go of the lights, jokingly. Nothing happened. I said, oh yeah, let go of the lights in Jesus' name, and click, they turned on.
Whoa.
I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, that was weird. Yeah, I was like, that was weird. So, but you know, at the same time, could have been coincidental, you know, who knows. But
well, I think with all the spiritual stuff, if it's too in your face, it kind of destroys the concept of free will.
Yes.
Like, it's you gotta be able to find it on your own. Like, that's if everything's just handed to you on a platter, it's like there's no real choices to be made. It's just, here it is.
Yeah.
So I think like part of the mystery of life, like, it's meant to be a mystery. It's seek and ye shall find. You gotta seek first. Don't seek and you won't find any of it.
That's right. If you don't seek it, you won't find it. And that's what I didn't understand for the largest part of this podcast. Because, oh, are you there?
Oh, just cut out for a second. Okay. Yeah, I'm back.
That's one of those things I didn't understand coming in this podcast, because pretty much it was Justin bringing topics to me when we first started for me to be like, oh, come on, man, and things like that. But now, Justin, you know, he took a break for a while because they're just slammed busy. They got 4 kids, 5 kids. They got so many kids. But, you know, and it wasn't good for him. He just didn't have time. So it was on me. And the more I looked into stuff, it was just, and now, you know, I'm down all these rabbit holes, dude, and I can't find my way back up.
Not the same man anymore.
Exactly. So, I mean, I got to go to, you know, I purposely don't listen to like a few Fridays of like Ninjas or Butterflies podcast, because I'm like, all right, I'm going to save these for when my mind starts to break from all this other stuff I'm taking in, and I'm going to go laugh with those guys. I'm going to go listen to some Theo Vaughn and some Sam Tripley. You know, I'm going to do all that and laugh and, you know, learn at the same time. But because, dude, I'm telling you, you can get down these looking into this stuff. And now I'm going to read that book. This is great.
So that book. That book is very well written. It's written for the lay person. It's not like some boring textbook. As you're reading it, it's kind of like a page turner. So, I mean, anyone who's interested in this, I encourage them to go get it. And I promise you'll enjoy it. It's got pictures even for people like me and you who like pictures.
Yeah. I want the visual.
But yeah, it's very well presented. And he's got gobs and gobs of sources for everything he says in the back. But nice. I'm just kind of wondering, like, is this theory ever gonna, I feel like it's just no one knows about it right now.
Yeah.
But if enough people find out about it, I think people are going to start doing some digging, and maybe they'll prove it right. Maybe they'll prove it wrong. But I mean, it's a new direction of study. And when I see the prevalence of this Anunnaki stuff, and I think Neanderthal predation theory is more likely. The Anunnaki people, they look at, the difference between like our genome, I think it's like the number of chromosomes, right? I think we have like 42.
Yeah.
40, and I think other we have 40 something. And then the other primates have like one more, one less. Anyway, they basically say like, aha, this is proof that the Anunnaki spliced our genes and genetically modified us, blah, blah, blah. But to that, I would refer them to like the part of the story with the population bottleneck. I mean, if you've got like low population numbers, you're gonna have a little bit of inbreeding. Maybe that does some weird things to the genetic code. I'd imagine that's responsible for that. But I think this theory's got some legs. I'm not like the perfect ambassador of it.
Yeah.
But none of this is my background, but maybe I get some people interested. That's the goal.
Yeah, dude, this is awesome. I loved it. This is another rabbit hole I'm going to end up down. But this is so interesting. It's not going to break my brain like this other stuff, you know. So the conspiracy theories, and then as much as I try so much to stay away from politics, but I can't stop myself. It's like you reach a certain age in life. I'm 41 now. You know, it's like you have to do it. I feel like it's a responsibility of my own to pay attention, you know, because we've got to do something. But I try to stay out of that, because that's one of those mind breakers too, dude. Politicians, gosh, can't stand politics. But
yeah, but you know, it's always been that way. We just see it more now, and we've made it this far, so they're not gonna, it's all gonna work out.
Yeah, eventually.
That one, the modern politics, just kind of hits a little closer to home. Yeah, this Neanderthal stuff, it's a fun rabbit hole that people of any political persuasion can entertain and come together on. We're talking about all of our ancestors. We all have this in common.
Yeah, we all came from these groups, so. No
it's
matter
the story of everyone. It's who all you humanity.
Are. Yeah, no matter who you are, it's your ancestor. So,
but yeah, anytime someone talks to you and you bring up conspiracy theories and they want to hear one,
oh yeah,
this is a safe one to share.
This is a safe one and a very interesting one. I can't wait. There's a guy at work I talk to all the time. We love conspiracy theories, everything, you know, and he's gonna love this. I can't wait to get this to him. He likes to read too, so I'm gonna tell him about the book.
I'll send you the link also, just so you got
it. Sweet. Yeah.
But there's also the author put together a little 15-minute YouTube video. It's got some good visuals that it's definitely it. I mean, it's the same sort of stuff that I went over, but he does it better.
Nice.
I'll send you that link too.
Sweet. Yeah. Send me that link for sure. But yeah. Well, I wanted to show off. Did I already do this? But maybe I'm going to again.
That was before we recorded.
Yeah, that's before we recorded. So Garrett here sent me a care package. Now, my lighter's not in there because it's in my car. But it came with a lighter. It fits right there. This thing, guys, is the best bong I've ever used. You can find Garrett. Look at this. He sends me this. This thing is going fishing and camping. It comes with a lighter.
I got to send you an updated version of that. In the week since you got that, I have improved things.
Oh, nice. And pre-rolls right there. I did not grab the papers he sent me. They are in there. I forgot to grab those.
Isn't that the most Atlanta thing ever?
Yes.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that. Their rolling paper is, I think it's like hippie sticks.
Yes.
It's they're pink. Yeah. Meant for the ladies. That's what Atlanta's smoking.
And look, guys. He sends me the preload. This is the rocket ship.
Space shuttle, I think.
Space shuttle.
I don't even know.
Look, guys, your pre-rolls right there. Pop them open. Boom. We're lighting up. Lighters right there. Got the hit kit. Garrett, you got your Instagram page. You're on X, Twitter.
Instagram is at the hit kit. That's the only social media account that I'm really active on with. Yeah. I made an X account. I don't really use it yet. Still trying to, I don't want to do social media. I just want to make things, you know?
Yes, dude. I feel the same way, but I'll give you a warning about X. I got on there and it is addictive. It is. So if you don't want to go down that hole.
Oh, I'm already addicted. I've got a personal account.
Dude, it's so addictive.
A business account. Don't need that in my life now.
Oh, and then see, when I use your products and I'm outside and I'm going through X, I'm just sitting there like, oh man, repost. And then later I'm looking, I'm like, what did I? Oh, come on, dude. Like, why did I repost that? Why did I think that was interesting or something like that, you know? But I gotta get my shit together on my X account. That's but yeah, man. I appreciate you coming on, Garrett. This was a blast, dude. That was a banger. I can't wait. This is going to drop Monday, just so you know. I'm going to drop
awesome.
All the. You guys check out his Instagram account at the Hit Kit and at the Hit Kit, right on X.
Website is www.hitkit.us.
Hitkit.us. Guys, this isn't everything he's got. Listen, he's got great products. I can tell you right now, they're high quality. I love them. And I'm telling you, this is the smoothest bong. You know what I did, Garrett? I tested it. So I loaded some Mountain Dew is what I bought from the local dispensary. That was the name of it. So I loaded down with some Mountain Dew and I took a big old hit and I filled this thing full of smoke and I sat it down. I walked inside, we had grilled hot dogs, right? And I walked inside, made a hot dog, talked to my wife a second, went outside. This thing, still full of smoke. I raised it up, took the hit. It's perfect. It's the best bong I've ever had, dude.
60 percolation holes.
Yes, it cannot. It can't. Let me take that off. Let me take that off. It's not going to stop up, folks. I don't know if you can. Yes, you can see that. Look at that.
And then the bottom is completely open. So any herb that falls out down the bottom of the bowl, it's just going to go straight to the bottom of the jar. Can't clog.
Just down into the water, not sucking up any holes. Got your rubber seal up there. This thing's sealed great. And that, I like that this detaches. You can just load it up in something, wrap it up. I got a little carrying case for it already. But guys, go check out the Hit Kit. I'm excited about this stuff. I'm excited to do some shopping there and support my man Garrett, because great company, great dude, great conversation tonight. I can't wait for this to drop, dude. And anything else you got before we go?
I guess I should make a promo code. I'll do AI podcast.
Yep.
And it'll take like 20% off. I think I can do that.
Sweet.
Yeah, that'll be set up on the site soon.
Guys,
I'll do that as soon as I'm done talking to you. It'll be ready for Monday's launch.
So guys, go on to www.thehitkit.us, right?
No, www.hitkit.us.
www.hitkit.us, not the Hit Kit. Go check out the promo. Use the AI podcast promo.
I got to write that down.
That way, Garrett will know, hey, he's going to give you 20% off his product, and Garrett's going to be like, you know what? These guys got me all these customers, and he's going to come back and talk to us again.
I'll have to do some more research.
Oh, man, yeah. I might, dude, after I dive into this book about... Man, these liars.
After you've read it, if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, let's
maybe I could come up with some theories and then bring you back so I can be like, listen to this, bro, and then, you know, fresh perspectives. That's,
I mean, what you said about like heightened emotional reactions imprinting upon like an environment, a place, making it haunted. I mean, that was new to me.
I mean, you sit and think of a Civil War battlefield. How many the emotions were high. I mean, fear, panic, distress, just, you know, everything. Sadness, anger, everything. Think of all that, and that can imprint on, you know, on us in a microscopic level.
Macroscopic. At a spiritual level.
Yeah, spiritual level.
Other dimensional level.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Maybe that's why we see Civil War soldiers walking across the field sometimes. Or, you know, maybe that's why people see ghost ships out on the water, you know. It's crazy, but never know. We might have just figured out ghosts.
Yeah, we figured it all out.
Yeah, we figured it out. It would also explain haunted objects, like the Annie doll or whatever it is, Annabelle doll. That would explain that. What if that was imprinted onto that? Crazy. All right, guys. Go check out Garrett's website. Use the promo code. Go check out his Instagram, his X account. Share all those too. You guys know what to do with us. Share the show. It's the best way you can help out. We're still over on Patreon. And all these links, when Garrett sends them to me, I'm going to put them in. Well, Justin's going to put them in the description below. I will put them in on the YouTube side. I'm also getting ready to sign us up on the Rumble, our official AI account on Rumble, and start posting videos over there. So if you guys use Rumble, be on the lookout for us. I'll drop it on the socials when we get that going. Other than that, Garrett, thank you again for coming on, man. That was such a great episode. And can't wait to read that book and take all kinds of notes, bring you back, and we'll really, really jump into this. And hopefully we'll have Justin and Lance, and we can just blow their minds the whole time. And, you know, that would also explain, they can say this happened. One more thing before we go. They can say this happened, you know, this many million years ago and this many million years ago. And the Bible can say that, you know, the Earth's 2,000 years old. But what does it really matter? Because time is, it's like the fourth dimension, dude, I think. You know, I think it's another dimension. I mean, obviously, it's not a man-made construct because things have life cycles, trees, animals. There's a length of time that they have a cycle of. But, you know, I think somewhere somebody's manipulated us, like the whole, if you've seen the calendar, we should have 13 months and instead of 12. And the first month of the year is supposed to be March because that's spring, you know, new year, new beginning. Doesn't that make sense?
That's a whole nother rabbit hole.
Yeah. Off of Neanderthal predation theory, that
it connects to so many things.
So many things.
It's not just it doesn't just complete Darwin's theory. It ties to all of it.
I'm telling you, and I know a few specific ones of our fans that are going to be taking this and running too. So we'll get all kinds of information from them too. They really do. They go deep too, like we do.
Oh yeah,
I love
podcasts. The cross pollination of knowledge. I listen to a lot. I've learned God knows how much over the past several years. Like listening to shows such as your own.
Yeah, man.
Good time to be alive. It's fun. We can put our heads together and start solving these mysteries finally.
Oh yeah. All right, folks. Well, thanks for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see y'all later.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.